hour on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Good morning to you. Good morning to all you junior high students who are not going to be calling anybody any names today. Do you know that, Riley?
Punk.
Wait a minute. Oh, you can. We're not in junior high.
Yeah, but I graduated.
But apparently this week is no name-calling week. This is an initiative that was developed by the New York-based Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, which seeks to ensure that schools safely accommodate students of all sexual orientations.
Hold on. What did you say? The Gay, Lesbian, Straight?
It's the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network. That means...
Well, doesn't that mean
everyone.
Like everybody?
Yeah, the Everyone Network. The Everyone Network...
The Gay, Lesbians... What about the bisexuals? Transgender?
They're not covered.
No,
the transvestites aren't involved in this particular coalition.
No cross-dressers either?
Well, I don't know. I don't know, really, if cross-dressing is a big thing in junior high. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well,
it's been a long
you
time
never know.
I've been to high school or junior high. But we do have some sort of guests, some observers here in the studio today from Bronx Science High School.
Yeah, Bronx High School of Science.
Where Mark Riley and I did a little presentation. It was just sort of a comedy show.
Where neither of us would ever have been admitted on our merits.
Well, you're right. Maybe I wouldn't have. Sarah Vogel and Eliza Simons are here. Good morning, girls.
Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Oh, hey. So they're here observing because they are, I assume, looking to do something. Whoa. Feedback. That was exciting. You don't hear that? So are you guys studying media? Is this what you want to do with your life?
I don't know if it's what I want to do with my life, but it's definitely something I'm very into these days, just being around the Media Activism Club. I love teaching people, and I love working with the media and creating something that others get to enjoy.
Nice. So now let's get to more important things. Now, you guys are in high school, and I can't even remember what it's like. I can kind of remember what it's like.
Oh, I remember high school. So I was in military school for 3 years.
You must have been a bad kid, Riley.
No, I wasn't. I went on a band scholarship, and my freshman year, they put me in a footlocker and rolled me down a flight of stairs as part of my initiation.
No, were you a geek, Riley?
No, I was a drummer, man. I was a drummer. Drummers are not geeks.
Right.
A lot of things we are, but geek isn't one of them.
That's right. That's right. You weren't like a flute player.
No.
Or a tuba guy.
No tuba guy. Played snare drum.
So you guys are at sort of a lofty high school, like you're with the smart kids.
Smart kids.
What?
No drinking, no drugs.
Our kids,
no teen pregnancy. Everybody goes to college. Yeah.
Wow.
So we were talking before about, you were asking me, what is the line, is there a line that we won't cross comedically? To you, what is the line, as high school students?
Yeah.
I mean,
what do you consider to be over the line?
Well, I don't think it's a line so much as a kind of edge that you're constantly pushing.
Uh-huh.
We have friends who are into pulling pranks, and there's that kind of... place where pranks become a little dangerous.
Really? Like what? Like this happens at your school?
Oh, well, super glue on the bathroom stalls. Yeah, that kind of thing.
That's horrendous.
And, you know, kids throwing toilet paper up on the bathroom stalls, all that. That's all the harmless pranks. But then when you get to things like, actually this week, a dean was beaten up by a student.
A dean was beaten up by a student?
I don't know if that was supposed to be... Yeah, but a student.
Are you leaking?
It's alleged. It's all alleged.
Somebody from the Board of Education is going to come up here and snatch them out.
We might have to tape this and use it in the news forecast for the rest of the day, the broadcast. So wait.
But it just maybe there's been some alleged school violence.
Well, there's a lot of hearsay and rumors around. But
how about name calling? Is there a lot of name calling? Are people mean?
That too.
Because, like, you know, apparently they're meeting up in junior high that they actually have initiated a week where they are telling people, but primarily I think it's around the use of the word faggot.
Yeah.
That, I mean, because that is sort of like the general term that people will use for anything. You know, that, you know, faggot.
Anything they don't like, yeah.
Right.
Or the person that perpetrates something they don't like, that's what they call it.
And a lot of times, like, you know, they don't realize that it's hurting people. You know, so I guess that the idea that, I know that I was called names, and, like, you know, I was pretty sensitive. Riley, were you a name
caller?
Yeah,
I was called. No, I wasn't a name caller.
Yeah.
But I learned how to respond to name callers really, really well.
Yeah, I could tell.
I was taught by the best.
The banter that you and Gelman sort of pull off.
Yeah. But, you know, the question of how far to go is kind of generated by a story that I gave the young ladies this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a radio station in our market here in New York that's in the middle of a controversy about a parody they did on the tsunami situation.
Right.
And now there are calls for people to be fired, and, you know, one of the people who was involved in this particular, and it's a morning show, we can be honest about that, is herself Asian and refused to be involved in the parody because she found it offensive. And people like jumped all over her case about that. So
what was the song? Did you hear it?
I did not hear it. It was a parody about. It was done to the tune of "We Are the World," apparently, and it ran for 4 full days.
Wow.
You know,
and it, I guess they got a lot of mail. It offended a lot of people. Like we.
Well,
we
I mean, the city councilman John Liu, who's the only Asian on the New York City Council, who I understand
is on the
faculty at Bronx Science. Was very quick to jump up and say, look, this is racist, and you know, an apology and donating 6 days of your salary isn't good enough, because that's what they apparently are going to do. The people on that show are donating 6 days of their salary to Tsunami Relief.
Like, I've done some awful jokes in my life on stage and even here on this show that I think push certain boundaries and make people, some people will get very offended. But, you know, there's a fine line between somebody being offended and it actually being provocative. I believe that if somebody like, that is horrendous. I think I just learned something. That's horrible. Like, you know what I mean? I think there's that fine line where if you push somebody to a certain point, like some people have, a context in their head. They have values that, are repressive, and they don't want to entertain anything that is sort of over the edge. But other people, I mean, a lot of over the edge comedy is, you know, that's blown my mind. I mean, that's where I've learned things.
Well, you know, what's strange about it, and my most vivid frame of reference is the whole debate about Amos and Andy in the black community. Because Amos and Andy was run off television by the NAACP in the mid-1950s because it was offensive to blacks. Now, when the video version of Amos and Andy came out like 20 years later in the late 1970s, who were the first people to go out and buy them? Black people. My sister has the entire Amos and Andy collection, which she finds uproariously funny.
But is it funny in a campy way, or is it funny for, you know, because of the comedy itself? Is it funny because this is horrible what people thought was entertainment at this time, or is it genuinely funny?
No, a lot of it is genuinely funny. I mean, you look at it and you laugh. I mean, there's given the racist history, because remember that Amos and Andy, when it was a radio serial, it was white guys.
Yeah.
It wasn't until it went on television, and that wouldn't work, that they actually hired a black cast. And ironically enough, I saw the guy who played Andy on a Perry Mason episode just yesterday.
Yeah.
That was about the only other thing he had a chance to do.
Well, that fascinated me, too, about, when Spike Lee did Bamboozled, and they actually, the idea that they sold a minstrel show, you know, to be made today.
Yeah.
And when you saw that thing, you know, when you saw the production
That's
values,
not that unusual, by the way.
Well, no, it happens all the time.
There's a lot of minstrel shows that are going under the guise of black film.
Absolutely, and I think that's what he was, you know, that was the commentary he was trying to make. That was the analogy and the metaphor that he was trying to construct. But this was a straight out of the, you know, the old days minstrel show done with, you know, contemporary production values and audiences screaming and yelling. It was really, that was, you know, pushing the limits of satire, certainly, and it was really over the top and over the edge. But it, you know, the resonance of it, you know, the impact it had on me in terms of, you know, seeing how disturbing it really was, was really stunning.
Yeah.
What's offended you? What do you find offensive? Like, you know, what was the last thing where you were like, oh, no, no.
I think the tsunami thing definitely pushes the limit.
I mean, it's important to push the limit, but if you do it too much, it's kind of repulsive.
You get numb.
It's distasteful.
Do you like South Park?
I've only watched it a few times.
Oh, come on, it's hilarious.
Yeah, it is. It's funny.
And they push the limit all the time.
It's offensive and funny at the same time.
I never watch it that much. My wife is a South Park freak.
Okay.
I mean, just like, you know, she loves them. And she's actually working on a South Park script right now.
Oh, wow.
And I never was into it because I thought it was silly. It's a cartoon. It's stupid. You know, I'm going to get tired of it. But there's usually, you know, at, you know, 3 out of 5 South Parks, I'll get one deep, really deep laugh.
Like in Bowling for Columbine, I think it was, they discussed how the creators of South Park actually went to Columbine High School and how, you know, they're just responding to that kind of community, that repressive atmosphere.
And they also had that little thing that those guys did within Bowling for Columbine, that little animated thing that they did, the history of firearms in America.
Oh, yeah.
Like
okay, well, we'll be back in a second. We're going to get into some news. Thanks, you guys, for coming down. And I hope that, you know, you learned something here. Let us know, okay, if you learned anything, because we might need to use your point of view of what we're doing.
We might need your names, you know, like references for our resumes.
Sarah Vogel, Eliza Simons are here, and they are going to be sitting watching for the rest of the show. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about Iraq. We've got Babak Daghampeshe coming up later from Baghdad. It's 15 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Courtesy of Air America Radio.
20 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
You're listening to Morning Sedition. This is Air America Radio, if you're wondering. So, you guys, if you want to be part of the Morning Sedition Book Club, you can still purchase Sam Lipsight's Homeland by going to morningsedition.com. He'll be back in the studio this Friday to take your calls and discuss the book. That's short notice. That's the way I used to read books when I was in high school, right? I was such a bad student. Like, having those girls in here just reminded me of, like, just how little I did in high school.
You're not the only one. Look, I was the consummate underachiever in high school. I did one semester my junior year where I had to show everybody I had a brain. I got a 91 average and then slipped right back to getting like 72s and 73s on everything.
But that was exactly the same with me. Like, for 3 years of high school, I was like, I don't want to do it. I used to sleep in class. I was just horrible. I got sent to the principal for, you know, I'm melting a pen once in electronics. But I wasn't a complete deviant. We used to ditch all the time. It was crazy. But one thing, what was I talking about? Sam Lipsight. Oh, yeah. Okay, so he's going to be here on Friday.
Yeah.
Right? But this is how I used to read books. If we had to read, like, three books for an entire, you know, semester of high school, I'd do it all in 2 days. Just, like, cram it through, not absorb anything.
Yeah.
But if you want to hear a little Lipsight, here we go.
Feeling is not quite the word for the feeling. How's bathing at knife point in the phlegm of the dead? Is that a feeling?
There you go. If that entices you at all into the dark, satirical mind of Sam Lipsight, go pick up Homeland at morningsedition.com, and we'll talk to him about it on Friday. I'm looking forward to it. I'm all amped up.
Yeah, I'm done. Listen.
All that high school energy in the room worked up. There's some part of me about that, you know, when I see, you know, there's some part of me I think that is still in high school, you know, that I wish I had that sort of like that exciting kind of like, you know, wow, it's all ahead of me, as opposed to like, oh, no.
Yeah, but you know, did you really, when you were in high school, did you really feel like it's all ahead of me?
No,
I felt like, well, I'm going to be gone by the time I'm about 23 anyway.
I felt like I knew everything and I was fully baked and I had it all under control.
Yeah.
But deep down inside, I was like, oh, no, help me.
Please. Listen, you know. On the other end of the age range spectrum, we got this guy.
Yeah.
His name is Bill Thomas. You may not know much about him. He's from California. He's a congressman.
This is the congressman who was on TV this last Sunday.
Yeah. He gets on Tim Russert and says essentially, listen, you know, when it comes to modifying Social Security, maybe President Bush didn't go far enough. Maybe we need to look at the issue of race with regard to Social Security benefits.
What the hell could that possibly mean? What is this guy? Is this part of the agenda for the new Reich? I mean, come on.
Well, I mean, you could look at it on the bright side and say, well, gee, maybe he's looking out for the brothers. Maybe I'm going to get a little extra money when I'm 65, which isn't that long from now.
It's the black bonus Social Security.
Yeah, it's the black bonus Social Security. Yeah, we get extra. Thank you. Reparations, baby.
But I got a feeling that's not what he's got in mind.
Not when he's talking about cutting costs, because that's what he's talking about, trying to save the program.
And he's also talking about women as well, to take in mind gender and race. And what the hell could that possibly mean other than, you know, crunching the numbers and seeing when women die, when black people die, and trying to, you know, to
adjust the benefits to reflect the difference.
There's no way that can be good.
Let's listen to what Bill Thomas said. I'm going to read this to you verbatim. So all y'all who are listening in our audience, people of color who are getting close to 65, this is what this guy has in store for you. Quote, we also need to examine, frankly, the question of race in terms of how many years of retirement do you get based upon your race. And you ought not to just leave gender off the table because that would be a factor. End quote.
What kind of trial balloon is this, Riley?
This is a trial balloon for women and blacks to get shortchanged, in my opinion.
But what could this guy possibly be? I mean, is this guy a renegade? Is he thinking on his own here? Or is this something that within the Republican Party is something they want to send up? What's your forecast of this? Is he going to actually follow up with this and give us some details? Or is he in trouble, this guy?
This is a trial balloon from a guy who really doesn't have to worry about it hurting him at all.
Sure.
So what he's going to do is float this up and see if it sticks to the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So this way now, and mind you now, this is a guy who's the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, the tax writing part. You know who's going to be the first person to crack his legs, don't you?
Who's that?
Charles Rangel, who's on the same committee, and he's the ranking Democrat.
Rangel doesn't take any guff from anybody.
No, he takes no crapola from anybody, and he's over retirement age. So
he's going to say, where do I fall into this?
Yeah, exactly. but believe me, this is part and parcel, in my judgment, of the attempt to chip away at Social Security so that eventually we will have in this country social Darwinism by the time our previous guests turn 65.
It's already happening because they're cutting all those benefit programs because this war is costing so much money.
They just asked for another $80 bill.
And they're, you know, that's going to come right out of the Social Security. It's going to come out of Medicare. It's going to come out of all these health coverage social programs.
But it's not going to come out of the pockets of the rich,
well,
who are
right.
still getting tax cuts as he starts talking about cutting all of these
programs. Social Darwinism is already well on its way. They've already put policy in that kills the poor on a yearly basis.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you something else. One of these days, some black people and some women may, again, I'm just speculating here, but may wake up and find out that they're getting a Social Security check that's lower than their white male counterparts.
Now, there's a lot of stuff going on in Iraq in terms of, you know, what's going to happen. The elections are coming up here pretty rapidly.
We know that's going to happen, I guess.
And there's been a lull. There's been a little bit of calm. They arrested one of Zarqawi's, you know, right-hand men who was responsible for up to 75 of the car bombings in the recent months.
Yes.
But there's also a threat on the table that says, you know, the heavy stuff is going to come down the day of the election.
There is the question of how the resistance, how the, God, I'm losing the name now, of the insurgents,
yes.
That's it, how they are actually going to respond to this election. We're hearing word from some of the more moderate Sunni groups, even Sunni groups that were in favor of boycotting the election, that they are now proposing that they be involved in writing the constitution of the country, even if they don't participate in elections. That might or might not send more Sunnis to the polls, but they want a role in writing the constitution so they're not written out of it.
Right, absolutely. So, you know, fortunately, I think tomorrow we're having Noah Feldman on,
yeah,
who helped write the constitution for the interim government. Maybe you can give us a little insight into that. But coming up next, Babak apparently is not available, but we will be talking to Rod Nordland, the Baghdad bureau chief for New Week, about exactly what's happening in Iraq as we head towards these elections.
We've got the latest here on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley, Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
So,
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yes,
the show is Morning Sedition. The network is Air America Radio. Kalo eating the cupo noodles.
Oh, yeah.
Kalo the Costco ho.
Oh.
How many? What do you got? About three boxes left of that? What do you got? About 50 more things of the cup of noodles there, Kalo?
Yeah, I have about 40.
Hey, I don't want to buzzkill, but I read something the other day in the paper. It's going to bum me out, man. It's going to bum me out. That apparently, you know, when you heat up a cup of noodles in the styrofoam, or if you put things in the microwave that are in plastic or covered with plastic wrap, basically when you hit the switch to cook it in the microwave, literally dioxin drips into your food. Anyways, have a good time. Enjoy those.
So, I'm sorry. So according to you, I can't eat beef jerky or a cup of noodles.
Beef jerky is a whole other issue. That's a matter of time.
My whole diet is ruined.
Beef jerky and cup of noodles. Wow, sounds like steak and bar squeeze to me.
It's speculative that, you know, as to whether dioxin is really bad for you. And there's no saying it might add taste to it. Hey, you know what?
The jury's still out, Kalo. Keep going.
I'm just going to have a styrofoam cup. Look, if you're going to go, I'm going to go. Let's have a good time. All right?
Yeah, but
right?
He uses pewter for the tea that he drinks most of the time.
Yeah,
the
CEO's son made that. They made that mug. All right? He made you one too, Riley. Where's your Krieger mug? I don't see it. You know who has
neither
it?
Neither do I.
Pashman has it. And you know what he does with it every day? He polishes
my mug?
Yeah,
he
keeps it very clean, Pashman. He keeps the mug. Yeah, it's very nice. Anyways, Ramon brought this in earlier, dressed in, looked like a CIA agent, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I think he's wearing thin, Riley. Anyways, we're going to have to replace Ramon with some other guy.
Somebody else?
We're
going
to fire him. Where's Donald Rumsfeld, Palm Pilot, for today, January 25th, 7 a.m.? Wake up. Try to do something. anything today without the friggin' press finding out about it. If you don't know, the Washington Post broke some news about Rumsfeld starting a super secret strategic support branch of the military intelligence. Super secret package. No, these guys can go anywhere, do anything without anybody knowing about it, so be careful. Here's 9 a.m. Replace strategic support branch spies with Washington Post reporters. Finally, someone who can gather information. 11 a.m. Send fruit basket to CIA with apology cards. Note, plant surveillance chip inside the kiwi. 1 p.m. Begin operation. Democracy is a messy business. Remove covert operators from France and reassign them to patrolling San Francisco bathhouses. Hello, San Francisco bathhouses. They still have those, do they, Jim? All right, here we go. 3 p.m. Quietly form strategic support branch to spy on the strategic support branch. Very complicated. 6 p.m. Now that I have my own spy organization in place, continue with plans for my own government. Note, see if we can get a green flag, because I like green. Yeah, okay. 9 p.m. bedtime. Count my blessings. It's amazing what a man can accomplish with a few billion dollars and blackmail pictures of the president smoking crack. All right. Here we go. Let's take the big shift into the serious.
Yeah.
Onward into Iraq on the phone. Joining us on the phone from Baghdad is the Baghdad bureau chief of Newsweek magazine. Good morning, Rod Norland. What is the mood like in Baghdad right now as we approach the elections and a blanket threat of horror is upon you?
Well, it's kind of a mixture of amusement and shock and horror at what's unfolding. I mean, it's the first election I've ever heard of in the world where the candidates' names have still not been revealed just a few days before the election and probably won't be until election day. And in fact, the voters won't even know in most cases who they're voting for. They'll just vote for a slate.
So is it just basically sort of like vote for Alawi or the other guys?
No, it's vote for, in Alawi's case, the Iraqi list, and it's well known that he's on the list, and mm-hmm. a few of the other people on the list are known, but there are 200, as many as 275 candidates on each list, and most of those people have chosen not to reveal themselves for fear of assassination.
Oh. Rod, we're hearing reports here, according to Brigadier General Irv Lessel of the Air Force, who's the Deputy Director of Operations. He's saying that things are calm in Iraq now, but he's expecting something big and bad and spectacular between now and Sunday's balloting. Is that the feeling that people are getting in Baghdad?
Yes, I think everybody is expecting the resistance to do something spectacular and probably something very, very violent. You know, there are going to be extreme restrictions on all kinds of movement in Iraq. Beginning on Friday, people won't be able to travel outside their hometown. On election day itself, they won't be able to move around in cars at all. They'll basically be allowed to go wherever they can walk, and the idea is they'll be able to walk in safety to their polling places. The problem with this, these security precautions is that anybody on the streets on election day will be a target, and the resistance has vowed to kill anyone who dares to go out and vote.
Rod, how confident are the Iraqi people in the Iraqi security forces that are supposed to provide their ability to go to the polls?
That's a joke, right?
Okay, all right. I was trying. You know, and look, we got Condoleezza Rice here saying there are 120,000 trained troops there. I'm taking the poor woman at her word.
There's 127,000 Iraqi police and Iraqi troops. That's true. As few as 4,000 of them have had complete training. I think quite a few more of them have had some sort of training. But even the American military refers to them as clowns, and not without reason.
So now let me ask you, Rod Nordwind, from Baghdad Bureau of Newsweek magazine. What kind of democracy is it, really, that where you got people voting, they don't know who they're voting for, they don't know if they can get to the poll? I mean, does it represent anything other than this sort of, you know, empty action, you know, on behalf of this administration trying to show that they've done something there? I mean, what does it really represent?
Well, it represents just the limits of American power in this country. They actually don't have a choice but to hold an election, because if they don't hold the election, you would have the majority Shia up in arms and possibly, you know, a much bigger rebellion on your hands. Pretty much now the only resistance is coming from some foreign fighters and a large number of Sunnis who make up nationwide about 20% of the population. And that's bad enough. That's, you know, crippled the reconstruction effort and made life pretty miserable for almost everybody here. If the Shia were to rebel, then it would really be a difficult situation. So they don't really have a choice but to hold elections on time.
Now the Sunni have many of them have pulled out of the election process. Yet now we get reports that they want to be part of the drafting of the Constitution. How do you reconcile that? How does that play out?
Well, I think what they're going to do is once there's an election, and if, as expected, most Sunnis sit it out, they'll form a government. It'll be a Shia-dominated government, which it should be, because the Shia are certainly a majority in the country. And then the Americans will bring a lot of pressure to bear on that government to bring Sunnis into the government in various ways. For instance, although it's a parliamentary system, ministers do not have to be members of the National Assembly. So they could bring Sunni ministers in, they could give them some ministries, they could put them on committees that are helping to draft the Constitution. They could give them a pretty big role in the constitutional process. And then, of course, there'll be a national referendum, and the hope would be that if they have enough of a role, they'll feel a stake in it, and then they'll want to at least join in the referendum on the Constitution, which will then be followed by an election pursuant to whatever Constitution they draw up in December. So they say, well, there's still opportunities to bring the Sunni in. The danger is that Sunnis will feel so alienated in the meantime that they'll, you know, that'll provide an even bigger recruiting ground for the resistance. And the other danger is that the Shia won't play ball. They'll say, no, it's our country now, you know. Side you, you know, we'll do what we want. Sunnis didn't vote, you know, that's their problem, you know. Now it's our turn. And that's a very big risk and could lead to something much more closely resembling civil war than what we already have.
Mm. Rod, to what extent, if any, will there be American input in the drafting of that new Iraqi constitution? Let's say, for the sake of argument, Alawi wins, or Alawi slate wins the election. Will the fine hand of the U.S. be behind the drafting of this constitution?
I think they'll have some. Well, Alawi's not going to win, first of all. Alawi will be lucky to keep his seat and have a seat in the assembly. I can't imagine him winning. And there is a school of thought that says, well, if he gets into the assembly and it's hard for the Shia list to decide who's going to be prime minister, then perhaps Alawi could emerge as a compromise choice. I kind of doubt that. I think most Iraqis are disenchanted with Alawi's term in office, and that would be a very unpopular choice here.
So you're saying he's done?
He's done. He's finished. He's a spent force. I mean, he may be able to stay in the government in some form, but anybody who's that is closely associated with the Americans in this country is toast. And you know, I think they all know that, too.
Well, Rod Nordwin, thank you for joining us. That's some great information that we haven't heard yet out of Iraq, and we appreciate you being here.
Thanks, Rod.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Take care.
All right. So,
whatever.
Yeah, right. We'll be.
Yo, I hadn't heard anybody else say that Alawi was done before,
but apparently it's old news to Rod. All right, so it's 44 past the hour. We'll be back after this on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
It's just the way they are.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about this before.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Huh. 49 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi!
Sarah America Radio, Morning Sedition. P.W. McDonald just came in and asked me if I was in the Mighty Ducks. And I, you know, he asked me if I was in the Mighty Ducks 2. And I wasn't in the Mighty Ducks 2. I was cut out of it. My buddy, who was a friend of mine at the time, directed it. And I, you know, I was just a young, angry comic then. He wanted me to play the angry valet. As you know, I've been cast. I was the angry promoter in Almost Famous.
Anger is a recurring theme in your career, isn't it?
But apparently in the scene where I played the angry valet, when the Ducks, the Mighty Ducks, were sort of trying to get into stores around Hollywood, I sort of like, you know, I sort of blew up. But then they're like, how do you get into these stores? And I was like, you know, you got to know somebody to get into any place in this town. And I literally, on camera, twice scared the ducks. Like, you know, the athletes stopped and these kids are like, hey, why is he yelling? What's wrong with the man? And you know what, Brendan? I'll bring in. I have footage of it. Yeah, my buddy Steve, you know, a few years back, sent me those tapes, and it wasn't that bad, but the ducks did look visibly disturbed and upset after I yelled at them.
One of them actually whipped out a cigarette to calm his nerves.
No, but you know, there's the chubby one and the tall one, and the one with the cowboy hat. I don't know. I can't remember quite. I was in a different point in my life then.
State of consciousness.
Just scared the ducks. That was the funny thing is that the director came up, he pulled me aside, he's like, "Hey, it's going great, all right? But can you take it down a notch? You scared the ducks."
Wait a minute. Didn't they tell you that in the Sprint commercial, too?
Yeah, I scared the kids in the Sprint commercial.
Whoa. Scaring youth since 19 and what?
I didn't have any problem with Almost Famous. They were very happy with that 45 seconds of cinema. So now let's get into this, Riley. There's a lot of stuff revolving around Donald Rumsfeld's Pentagon today. Yesterday, as we reported, the Washington Post had broke the story about a super secret strategic support branch.
Yeah.
Which actually started April 25th, 2002 as something called Project Icon. Now, this is an arm of the Department, the Defense Human Intelligence Service. It involves case officers, linguists, interrogators. Its focus is primarily human intelligence. They will report to Rumsfeld directly or through the DOD, which would be Stephen Cambone. I guess one of the things that they keep saying now is like none of these squads will answer to Rumsfeld directly because we need to have somebody in between Rumsfeld and the squad to blame if something goes wrong.
Well, you know, that was Lawrence DeRita, who's the Pentagon spokesman. That was his defense of his agency and his attempt to try and discredit the article that was in the Washington Post. Now, yesterday, DeRita had to turn back around and acknowledge that the substance of the piece was absolutely correct. Yes, these defense teams have a strategic whatever they were, have been in existence since 2002. And Mark, the most disingenuous part of all of this is that they're saying, well, we told Congress about this, but we told them about it under a different name, so maybe that's why they were confused about the fact that they didn't know about it.
Right.
This is amazing stuff.
So now the primary issue that's at hand is that obviously a lot of this stuff, we've read about this stuff, you know, certainly as liberals and progressives, that a lot of this took place in the 70s, in the 60s. You know, they had the black ops, they had the Honduran death squads, these people in co-ops, the military in cahoots with the CIA, would carry out assassinations, coup d'etats, and whatnot. And then there was some sort of commission, the Church Commission.
The Church Commission in 1976.
That put a stop to much of that stuff.
Well, it inserted congressional, very serious congressional oversight, particularly on the part that had to do with the CIA.
Okay.
In other words, the CIA couldn't just go out here and you know, commission and execute these kinds of operations. They had to let Congress know about it. And the whole point of the Washington Post piece was that Rumsfeld had set up these shadow agencies inside the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, so he specifically would not have to go to Congress and report exactly what these different squads were doing. Now, Mark, you said something before we went on the air that I think is very telling, and again, falls into the realm of speculation, but you got to ask yourself how much substance there is to it. When Janice Karpinski, the general who ran Abu Ghraib, was questioned about exactly how all of this torture took place.
She always talked about these guys that were not in military uniforms, that would show up with prisoners, go into the room, kind of, you know, do whatever they do, and then walk out. And she was told that these guys were allowed to come in. And my assessment, after hearing about this, that these were part of the strategic support branch of the Pentagon.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, when she asked them exactly what they were doing, and she kind of got, oh, none of your business. Man.
Yeah, none of your business. I don't know. They had suits on, and they were different
suits
than mine.
And they were different guys, and,
they looked like business people that had business to do, and I didn't want to interrupt the business.
Yeah, so now, you know, it leaves open the question, were any of these people used, and interestingly enough, in defense of this strategic support branch, now they're saying that these guys had a hand in capturing Saddam Hussein. Like, that justifies their existence now.
Well, you know, my question is, why didn't they say that when they captured
Saddam Hussein? Yeah.
Why didn't they say that Project Icon, or whatever they were calling it at the time, that the reason we did this is because we got these great, you know, the strategic support branch super defense teams that caught this guy. Now they're saying it in defense of, you know, what came out in the Washington Post, which means that it's either bull
or,
you know.
I'll take A, number one. It's bull. Now, your boy, Stephen Cambone, your homie, met with John Warner, the chair of the Senate, was it Armed Services, I think?
Yeah, it was John Warner and
Carl Levin, who's the ranking Democrat on the Senate Armed Services Committee. And Warner, now, interestingly enough, Senator Levin didn't say anything. Warner came out and said, well, you know, it looks like this is not a problem. It looks like everything has been done according to oil. And there seems to be substantial support in Congress for the existence of these branches. Now, what's interesting about this is most Congress people, and John McCain reacted this way on Sunday when he was confronted with this information.
Yeah.
Most Congress people hate the idea of something going on in government or in a government agency that they have not been made aware of, particularly organizations like Armed Services and foreign, you know, committees like Armed Services and Foreign Relations, where they figure they're dealing with very sensitive information in a lot of cases, dealing in some cases with classified information. They have these briefings, and now suddenly, you know, usually when people find out that there's information that they haven't been made privy to, they want to know, well, why are we having all these briefings? Why are we having all these meetings? Warner's response to this was very interesting. A lot of Republicans are lining up and saying, hey, this is fine, this is not a problem.
Yes, it's helping national defense. Why should we argue with it? Yeah, Carl Levin didn't release a statement.
Yeah.
And,
we're going to find out what he had to say, though. He's a friend of the room.
And yeah, and this, you know, this we're going to cover this throughout the day, obviously, because it's very interesting that this whole idea of the strategic support branch and this human intelligence,
yeah,
this is all part of a global policing sort of doctrine that was, you know, part of the Project for the New American Century that was put together by the neocons, you know, back in, you know, 2000, yes?
Maybe even before that.
Well, there's a Pax Americana from, I think, from the 90s, but, you know, this is like, this was...
Scary.
It was sort of part of the plan.
Yeah.
There's a liberal agenda from the Streisand Compound 1, enlist in Rumsfeld's new espionage unit as a stylist. They're going to need stylists. 2, Ashcroft's leaving. Time to retrieve porn stash from underneath the rose bushes. Wow. If you keep them outside, they're probably not going to... All right, 3, write anti-Bush book for single women called We're Just Not That Into You. Come on. 4, oppose anti-abortion rally by saying that's the best argument for birth control I've ever seen.
Ooh.
5, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Bush only wants $80 billion more for the military? Wait, let me look at my jar. Here, take what you need. Wake up, sheeple. You're being robbed.
We're going to talk a little more after the top of the hour, Mark, about this connection between the neocon death cult.
And we'll tell you about that $80
billion. And about that $80 billion and the Pentagon. And get ready to call us the Liberal Confessionals in the next hour here at Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron, you're listening to Air America Radio at 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians. With no sense of humor, and of course, the piggies. I like the sound of the pigs. What's happening, Mark Riley?
I wish I knew, Mark Maron.
We're doing all right.
It's a wonderful day.
It's all right. You know, the roads weren't as bad as I thought. Everything's looking pretty good out there.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got most of it cleared. The guy who usually takes me to work, his only complaint is he can't park the car. But that's not the issue. What are we talking about here? We've been talking about the Pentagon. We've been talking about Rumsfeld's new secret super strategic support branch.
And Bush's bill.
Yeah.
$80 billion.
Now, let me ask you something, because I don't quite understand all this, you know, because economics is not my strong suit. I do want to say this. Tomorrow, we're going to have Mick Ware from Time Magazine, who is one of our favorite guests.
And yeah.
And he'll know exactly what's going on in Iraq, because he's usually, you know, up to his neck in it. He was embedded, I believe, probably with the insurgents.
As of yesterday, he was still embedded.
And attorney and author Noah Feldman, who will be on, who helped draft the Constitution for the interim government of Iraq, is going to talk to us a little bit about, you know, what challenges, you know, the Americans face, and also what challenges the Iraqis face tomorrow. Great guest, very informative guy. My question is, when George Bush says, you know, we're going to need another $80 billion, and they're going to put that into the budget, where the hell is this money coming from, Riley? Because we're, you know, I just don't know about economics. I don't know how this works. I know that the country is, you know, in the largest debt that it's ever been in, ever. Mm-hmm. And now $80 billion more. Where does that come from?
Well, this is a supplemental budget request, so it's not included, I guess, in the existing budget,
yeah.
Which I guess would come out of the federal treasury.
Okay.
My assumption is, and I could be wrong about this, but my assumption is that this would, in fact, come from the same general pot that the regular budget would come from. It's just an extra request. But remember that this is in addition to $25 billion that they've already requested in emergency funding, which is tacked on to the current budget. So what we're talking about is not just $80 billion. It's a total of $105 billion.
Mm.
And that's just the latest request for funding.
So now this money is going to, they're already putting the crunch on Medicare on a state-to-state level. All these red states that, you know, thought that they were doing the right thing by voting in, you know, this president are getting hit on the state level with, you know, health coverage and, you know, lack of insurance coverage and, you know, cuts in Medicare and
Medicaid.
Hundreds
of thousands of people across America, in some cases, being thrown right off the Medicaid and Medicare role.
Do you think that they start, you know, Republican sort of conferences among congressmen and senators? Do you think they open each day and say, okay, you guys, what if the poor don't die?
Yeah.
Where do we go from there?
Well, see, this is the paradox that Republicans are facing at this point. You're talking, when you talk about Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare,
yeah.
They eat up the biggest collective chunk of the U.S. budget.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And they are considered, quote, entitlement programs. They are, to some extent, means-tested in that you make a certain amount of money over which you don't end up paying Social Security taxes, for example. On income over $90,000, you don't
right.
pay.
Okay.
In many cases, Medicaid, Medicare, you end up having to have, you know, they are means-tested in that you make above a certain amount, you're not eligible for these programs.
Mm-hmm.
So you're aiming, and these programs are aimed at a specific part of the population. They are also, because they are so expensive, a favorite target of budget cutters. It's the easiest place to say, well, hey, cut those programs. Those are entitlement programs. And when you do that at the same time you're cutting taxes for the wealthiest 1% or 2% of the American population, your intentions become very, very clear. You are empowering the rich financially at the expense of the poor and working people in this country.
Isn't it awful? Even the word entitlement seems like condescending to me. It's like those people that don't work, that have nothing, they think they're so entitled to this.
To this, yeah. But see, Social Security is, in fact, about your working life.
Absolutely.
You are entitled. Yeah, there's a payroll tax that employers kick into, but the bottom line is the Social Security payroll tax that you pay that gets deducted from your check.
Yeah.
That's what you're, you know, paying into the system. So you are paying from your work. So how they can call it an entitlement program, and see, entitlement programs just 10, 12 years ago were largely focused on welfare.
Right.
You'll notice that because the rolls have dropped to historic low levels, they don't go after welfare anymore.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about, I want to talk a little bit more about Rumsfeld. Can we just hear, like yesterday, John Ashcroft said goodbye, you know, in a very dramatic,
and
very
God bless.
Heavy-handed, very preachy, to say the least, a statement to his coworkers. I just wanted you to hear this if you haven't heard it, and then when we come back after the break, we're not going out with it. Well, I want to hear number one there, Chris.
The Bible recounts the story of creation, how the ordinary, the dust of the earth, is assembled into the shape of the noble in the image of God. And then it goes on to say that that form was given life when God breathed into it. To breathe life into something is to inspire something. The verb really means to breathe life into. In a very special way, you have devoted yourselves to breathing life into one part of this department after another. Whether it's collecting the revenues, whether it's enforcing civil rights, whether it's guarding the environment, whether it's pursuing the criminal element, whether it's providing advice to the executive branch, whether it's defending in the courts the policy decisions of this government. The fact that you would share your life, that noble breath, with this institution to achieve things that are so important to liberty and freedom is in itself an inspiration to me. I will never forget my opportunity to serve alongside you. I will always give thanks to you and to the Creator for according me this chance to work with nobility.
Hey, John, take a breath, man. Take a breath.
Wait a minute. Hold on. I'm breathing life into something.
Dude, I mean, what is that? How about, hey, nice working with you. I think we did the best we could.
Yeah.
Not bring
and thanks for the watch.
The creation of the universe to sort of like, you know, to say like, you know, okay, you know, I hope everybody does okay in the future and I got to go.
Yeah.
Breathe life. God created the cosmos and the planets. And
then from the dust of the universe.
And the Department of Justice under me.
Under me.
Yeah.
We made sure that the dust of the universe did not return to the dust of
the universe.
Yeah,
we should go over some of his highlights. Can we, like, dude, let's just hear him like one more time. Number two. Let's just hear Ashcroft, the second one.
Whether it's pursuing the criminal element, whether it's providing advice to the executive branch, whether
take
it's defending in the courts of policy
take a breath.
Decisions of this.
Breathe life into yourself. Nope. All right, we'll be back in a second. It's 14 past the hour. We're going to talk about Donald Rumsfeld, about the neocons, and how these new sort of strategic support branch, the human small squads,
yes,
of the secret intelligence, was always part of their plan from the very beginning. 14 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley, because two marks are better than one. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
All right, 18 past the hour, Mark Maron here. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. That's Mark Riley sitting there.
Where?
Kalo Cup of Noodle, Costco Ho over on the board. I'm sorry, buddy.
Mr. Kalo to you, pal. Yo.
Oh, man.
He ain't chopped liver over there.
I'm going to have to go to Costco now. I'm just going to...
Yeah.
I tend to keep it small. You know what I mean?
You are the most guilty person I've ever met.
Really?
Like, you just call me that, and you're like, I got to go to Costco.
Right, before
give the money.
Before it's even out of my mouth, I'm putting Kalo down. Like, Kalo to Costco, I'm sorry, Kalo.
Kalo, how many chicken cutlets you got left, man?
I 300.
So, yeah, 300.
I've got two or three more pounds.
Wow. Two or three more pounds of chicken cutlets.
Yeah, I made some nice chicken cutlets on the walk.
Do you have a car?
Ooh.
My girlfriend's car, yes.
Oh, that's right. I've been in that car.
Yeah,
we
nice,
drove
right?
to Mark Riley's house in that car.
Yes,
oh, yeah?
Have.
Yes, we have.
Oh, okay.
So here's my dream diary from yesterday. Do you want to hear it?
Sure.
Okay, here we go. I'm watching TV, and Adrian Brody is reading off the Oscar nominations. And now the nominees for Best Actor in a Leading Role... Mark Maron as the caustic political crusader in The Bloviator. Mark Maron as the hilarious radio personality with a dark secret in The Wacky Morning Guy. Mark Maron is a man torn between career and home in 3,000 miles from my wife. Mark Maron as a genius struggling with severe mood swings in The Bipolar Express. And Mark Maron as a ruthless insomniac serial killer in I'll Sleep When I Die. Then everything turned gold, and suddenly I'm at the Oscars, and everyone there is me. Hundreds of me. In black tuxedos by Hugo Boss. Hundreds of me in silver lamé gowns by Vera Wang. Me and me on the red carpet making jokes about my choice of clothes. I've had way too much work done. Me as the host. I'm funny, but not too funny. I do the one about how long the show is. Me singing the nominated songs. I suck. Me as a representative of the accounting firm of Price Waterhouse. Me receiving the Irvin Thalberg Humanitarian Award. After a montage of scenes from my work, I thank me for that kind introduction and say that if it weren't for the patience and kindness of me, I never would have succeeded in this business. All of me stand to honor this very special me. As the evening goes on, I win all the technical awards and the supporting awards, and unfortunately I'm edged out of the writing awards by me. The suspense builds to the big moment. Best actor, I clinch. And the Oscar goes to, I tear open the envelope, Mark Maron in The Cat Whisperer. I woke up and my bed was filled with the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion.
Ooh.
That's one of those insanely narcissistic, perverse dreams about myself. So dig it, Riley. Rumsfeld's powers. The almighty Rumsfeld.
Yes.
Has control of everything. And now Porter Goss is just going to be the sitting there in a gutted pavilion. Just sitting there at the CIA going, yeah, whatever they need, okay.
What has Donald Rumsfeld done in his tenure as Secretary of Defense to warrant all of this additional power? What has he done?
Yeah.
Tell me, Mark Maron.
Well, I'm not sure. This is a guy that's under fire. It's a guy that most people are unhappy with. It's a guy that, you know, rambles through explanations of things. It's a guy that, you know, a lot of people want to see taken down, and it's a guy who's making huge power moves within the administration. The Pentagon lawyer's definition of the war on terror is characterized as ongoing, indefinite, and global in scope. In effect, this no longer limits the Defense Secretary's war powers to times and places of imminent combat. This is what we're talking about, the strategic, what's called the strategic support branch. U.S. law defines clandestine as actions that are meant to be undetected, and covert as actions the U.S. government denies its responsibility for. Covert action is subject to stricter legal requirements, including a written finding of necessity by the president and prompt notification of senior leaders of both parties in the House and Senate. No more.
Mm-mm.
Not if these things, you know, happen.
And
they
seem to be prepared to sit still for it. I'm talking now about these people in the House and Senate.
Well, that statement by John Warner and Carl Levin didn't make one, but John Warner walked out of a meeting with Stephen Cambone and said, this is the best thing for the country, basically.
Now, Stephen Cambone is an interesting figure in this, Mark, because he, at least from where I sit, is the link between Rumsfeld and that cabal of neoconservatives that formulated this war in the first place.
And also, he's the guy that took a lot of hits during the hearings about the torture.
Yes.
And, you know, and everyone thought, you and me, both thought he was done.
I thought he was gone.
But these guys are so good at blame dispersal. The neocon death cult is so good at blame dispersal that somehow or another, this guy disappeared for a week or two and he didn't go anywhere. It got dropped. Didn't get followed through. But they're all still in charge. And this is always the way that the neocons wanted it.
Well, see, it's interesting that the Washington Post, as of this morning,
mm-hmm.
in today's editions, say now that this defense espionage unit, the strategic support branch, will be working with, not in place of, the CIA. And that's a very important distinction. That's the spin that they've managed to put on all of this over the last 24 hours or so.
But isn't that really just Rumsfeld throwing them a bone, just, you know, for the press? I mean, isn't that just like, you know, what are they really going to do? You know, I mean, it's like a senior military official speaking on condition of anonymity said CIA Director Porter Goss told him Monday that he had no issue or questions or concerns about the Pentagon arrangement.
Yeah.
Like, he's not fighting at all. I mean, he's in complete cahoots with this thing. Whatever they want to do is going to be okay with them. They've already gutted the agency. Half the guys that used to be there were so pissed off they left.
Well, it's like closing the barn door after the horses run the derby. You mm-hmm. know, I mean, it's a done thing. This strategic support branch exists. The CIA can't push it out of existence. The Congress cannot legislate it away. It exists. Now the question is, how much oversight will Congress have in terms of its activities, and exactly what will it be doing? I think, if you look closely at this Washington Post article, Mark, that there is a difference between what the CIA thinks these units are going to be doing and what the units themselves think they're going to be doing. Here's a CIA official, same guy you quoted before, essentially saying that these units are good at collecting battlefield information on, quote, bridges and tunnels and things like that. And frankly, we don't always want to be pulling the CIA resources to do this. In other words, you guys are going to be, you know, just a bunch of backbenchers. Don't think for a minute that an organization that calls itself the Strategic Support Branch is going to be limited to passing intelligence on bridges and tunnels.
Yeah, and also, they're not going to be limited to the countries that they're in. They can be in countries where there is no combat. They can be anywhere. I mean, in these articles, in what the research we've been doing, operating locations are obviously Iraq and Afghanistan, but others are emerging target countries such as Somalia, Yemen, Indonesia, the Philippines, Georgia. And this is also part of the conditions of this thing working is that they can be anywhere gathering intelligence, which fits right in to the original neocon agenda, at least in the 2000 report issued by the Project for the New American Century, where it basically says, you know, the U.S. must take military control of the Gulf region, whether or not Saddam Hussein is in power, which they are trying to do, while the unresolved conflict with Iraq provides the immediate justification. The need for a substantial American force presence in the Gulf transcends the issue of the regime of Saddam Hussein.
then also states increasing military pressure on China. It also says development of a worldwide command and control system to contain dangerous regimes of North Korea, Libya, Syria, Iran. So these guys, I think, are going to be at the forefront of being, you know, of being the presence, secret presence, in all of these countries.
I have a feeling that they may well have been in Venezuela a couple of years back when people tried to overthrow the government, the elected government of Hugo Chavez. That was, remember, when they announced before the coup actually took place that the coup had taken place and that Chavez had resigned.
And that would be under Project Icon.
Probably, or Humint, or whatever they call it.
Yeah, so we are going to do the liberal confessional after this. It's our phone number is 866-303-2270, so start ruminating, start thinking about
it. Get your dialing fingers ready. This segment always moves me to tears.
If you have something you need to confess, if something is eating at your soul and you want to share it with us, your time is coming.
You kiss a conservative? Call us.
866-303-2270. Air America Radio.
On Air America Radio.
What is?
Mark Mariner, Mark Riley on Morning Edition.
No, where's my coffee?
Hey, where's my coffee? Come on, man, what's going on?
Yeah.
866-303-2270 is the number for your liberal confession, please. Please, get it off your chest. Ease your burden, folks.
Yes.
Sometimes it's not easy being a liberal. We all straighten the straight and narrow from time to time, but when we need to unburden ourselves, we can always confess our liberal sins. If you want to take a turn in the liberal confession, give us a call. 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. Over right now, it's my turn. Bless me, Brother Riley, for I've sinned.
How can I unease your burden, my son?
Well, I'm hoping that the election in Iraq this weekend descends into horror and chaos.
Tell me, Brother Mark, what is your reason? Based on compassion and solid geopolitical reasoning, I must assume for wanting this.
Despite Bush. And you know, to teach him a lesson about preemptive war, arrogance, and imperialistic interventionism, but mainly just to spite him, Riley.
Lord have mercy.
I know, I'm an awful human being.
Mark, my brother, I believe that no man should feel that way about himself.
Well, thank you, Riley.
But in your case, I'm going to make an exception. Allow me to point something out. The war in Iraq is not going well for our president. The situation in that country has been a hopeless quagmire for well over a year now, and yet George W. Bush was still reelected. The Republicans retain control of both houses of Congress, and the mainstream media continues to coddle and make excuses for Bush's administration.
Brother Riley, if you're trying to inspire my clinical depression, you have succeeded.
Thank you. What I'm trying to do is remind you that no matter what happens in Iraq, good or bad, the president is not affected by it.
Uh-huh.
If the election is a huge success, then Bush will get good coverage. If it's a huge failure, then Bush will get good coverage. Uh-huh. It doesn't matter either way, except for the people of Iraq, who would like to be able to leave their homes without fear of being killed. We would wish nothing less for them.
You're so right, Brother Riley. Thanks to the blindness of the press and the deafness of 55 million Americans, we liberals now have the freedom to hope for a safe and peaceful election in Iraq. Because out of everyone, the people who least deserve to suffer in this whole mess are the Iraqis. God, I feel so ashamed for my petty attitude.
Your shame should be penance enough.
Thank you, Riley.
But sure as hell ain't gonna be. For your penance, I want you to find the poorest neighborhood in New York City and walk through it with a wad of cash sticking out of your pocket. Then I want you to dress up like a homosexual and prance through a working class trailer park in the Deep South. In other words, I want you to go out in public and make yourself a target.
And by being a target and a sitting duck, I might get some idea of what it's like for an average Iraqi citizen who just ventured outside.
Amen, Brother Mark. Now go forth and sin no more.
Thanks, Riley. Now, if anyone else out there wants to confess and seek absolution in our liberal confession, you can give us a call right now at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. I forgot the...
Amen!
All right, here they come. Are you ready? Are you ready to absolve some people?
I'm ready.
Brian, what's your sin? Brian in Seattle, what do you have to confess?
I have sinned. Well, back in 1994, I read the entire book of Revelation straight through on a public access show in Seattle.
Wait,
you know why?
Why?
To get over with! I don't have to live this thing out.
Wait, I was going to absolve you, but there's something I think that you might have done an important service for somebody. So you actually said, I'm going to get myself some public access time. And
no, I just did a tape.
Okay.
I did a tape, yeah.
And you were just sitting in your basement reading Revelations?
Yeah, I just read it straight through, and then I think if you look closely, there's a pint of Canadian mist sitting on a side table there.
But Brian, what was the actual intent? What were you thinking?
I don't know.
You wouldn't have to call it.
It's like maybe I just never wanted to get laid ever again.
Yeah. Well, that would. But you know what? I mean, maybe that should be your penance. But the truth of the matter is like you might get. You know, who knows? There might be some Revelation groupies. Did you get any response to this action?
Well,
I think what do you think for penance for reading Revelations on public television?
I think that you ought to buy a half-hour public service access time for your local pornographer.
No, I think what you need to do. And also, I think you need to get back on TV. Hold on a minute. I think you need to get back on TV and read Leviticus out loud.
Oh, yeah, and well, and he claims that my leprosy.
Okay. Well, you could do the New Testament and read from Mark. Thank you.
Yeah,
Mark from the Bible Show.
Thank you, Brian. Take care, man. I don't know what. You know, that's one of those weird ideas. How do you got to be like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to read all of the Revelations. I'm going to put it on tape.
Public access TV show.
Oh, man, I love public access.
So do I.
safe if you're reading Revelation with Canadian in the background. All right, what do we got here? Scott is listening in Cincinnati, WCKY. How are you, Scott, for your sin?
Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. I confess the sin of silence. My wife and I just moved into our first house, and we moved from a third-floor apartment. We couldn't really have people, you know, move a sofa down three floors, so we just had people come and help us pack.
Mm-hmm.
So we're packing, and it's a couple we know, and they're big bushheads.
Mm-hmm.
And the wife starts talking about how this woman she works with is cutting all ties to anyone who voted for Bush, that she just can't continue to be friends with anyone who can vote to ruin the country like this.
Yes.
So then the wife starts going off, oh my gosh, I can't believe, you know, how seriously some people take this. I mean, you know, don't they see all the good that George Bush has done? Mind you, this week our Terry Edwards sign still up.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't ever
take that down. Okay, so, right. So, you know, she's going off on this, and what I wanted to say was, you know, I completely agree with your friend. I think you guys were just morons. I don't know how you've done this for not paying attention. So I just 3.5 years. What is your problem? But they were helping us pass. We told them, I said, yeah, you know, it's just politics. I mean, you know, why do people have to take this so seriously?
Well, we say that every day on the show sometimes. What you need to do, I think you should call them weekly and have them move your couch somewhere. You know what I mean? Like, make them pay. You know, they're still saying, just call them, you guys are really great people, brother, stuff, but we need to move the couch back upstairs.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, on a weekly basis, just call them, hey, we need to move the couch again. Just come over, we're moving across the street.
Yeah, we got an early refi. Want to help build an addition on our house?
It's a weird thing, though, when you're in a situation like that. How long have you known these people?
Oh, got a couple of years.
So it's like, but you knew this about them, you guys just never talked about it before.
Yeah, we don't have dinner, we would see the W04 spinners on their cars.
So you just, it was this unspoken thing, and you guys got along other than that?
Yes.
Oh, it's so creepy, isn't it?
Yeah. I feel the burden for even being friends with them. I mean, they're, you know, they seem like decent people. I just don't understand why they can't, you know, see the weasel for what he is.
Yeah. Well, did you have any way to, you know, get this, you know, sort of email and stuff that proves to them that they're wrong? You know, maybe you should go to FirmWaysAddition.com, see if there's anything you can find there at the Center for American Progress, and maybe start to sort of educating them the other way, find out some, you know, proactive conversations with them to tell them the other way. That would be challenging.
Well, I've tried that with other friends of mine, and it's, you know, it's the layoff thing of packed down the frames. They don't see it.
So you got to reframe it all the way down, huh?
No, I've even tried, you know, because I'm a Christian. I tried talking with Christian friends of mine, and, like, bringing them bits of like, a certain amount of going, well, it says war is bad. Don't kill each other, you know, no matter what happens. How can you support the guy who's the war? And they just stop talking to me.
I got a sentence for him. I got a sentence. Go to MorningSedition.com and buy your friends some Morning Sedition swag and send it to them.
Yeah.
Anonymously.
They're America's stuff.
They're America. No, Morning Sedition. We got our own swag.
Yeah.
Send them a picture of me and Mary.
Okay.
And also, here's what you should do. Whenever you pass a payphone, you know, think, you know, work up some anger, all right? And call their machine, either at work or home, and just say, you're stupid. You're stupid. And I secretly hate you, and I hope that, you know, everything goes bad in your life and hang out.
Thank you, Father.
Okay, you take care.
No problem.
So we're taking more calls, 866-303-2270. We're taking confessions. So please, you know, if you need to unburn yourself, give us a call. It's 43-TAXI-R at America Radio.
Join the Morning Sedition right now. Call 866-303-2270.
Call that 866-303-2270.
You'll know until he tries this. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
And good.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey!
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. This is the liberal confessional. If you have to confess, 866-303-2270 is our number to do that. We are taking confessions now. Ron in Columbus, listening to WTPG. What is your sin?
Bless me, fathers, for I have sinned.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
On Thursday, on the not one damn dime day, first off, I should tell you that I run a small business, and so it hurt me a little bit, but not too much, but it's okay, because there were plenty of W heads who came by and bought stuff, so.
But anyway. What is it that you sell, Ron?
I sell board games.
Ooh. Yahtzee!
Okay.
Yeah, I like Yahtzee, but anyway, so I went and I thought, well, okay, I need my newspaper, so yeah. I went to the store. And I bought a USA Today.
Oh.
And I bought a New York Times.
Yeah.
And a Columbus Dispatch, which I'm very ashamed of. And I went to the register, and my debit card wasn't working for some reason. The network was down. And I had $2 on me. So I couldn't afford all three.
Yeah.
And I put the Times back and got the Dispatch.
Ooh.
Wow. So you went with the local sort of Republican biased paper.
And I did it because I needed my comics.
No comics in the Times. That's
no.
So you want penance?
Yes, please.
Well, aside from, you're going to have to subscribe to Mother Jones for 2 years at least.
Okay.
And I have nothing to do with Mother Jones.
Okay.
And do you have a pet that still, is there anybody you know that has a pet that's, you know, either, you know, still being trained?
I say we have a dog and a cat, but they're both kind of trained. I don't know of anybody who's got a pet that's being trained.
Well, I was going to say that you could take the USA Today and also
the Columbus Dispatch
and maybe put them on the ground. Maybe you can encourage your pets to once again start peeing in the house on the papers.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, that's not good enough, is it, Ron? You want more punishment, don't you?
Yeah, please. Thank you, sir. May I have another one?
Oh, my goodness.
How about a little of that? There you go. Now, what? Now, let me ask you something. What kind of board games do Republicans buy?
Oh, Monopoly. Yeah. Got the Monopoly and Clue. Yeah, Clue is kind of a, it's an ironic one, but they do buy that.
Maybe I'm going to have to ask you that you're going to have to do perhaps a Twister demonstration in your store with a Republican. How's that? Now, I'm not going to have to do my own penances today. You know what you got to do, Ron.
Yeah, I know.
All right, thanks for calling.
Okay, thanks.
Take care, Ron.
Wow. Man, I tried to, it's like the hard thing about giving people penance is that, they're calling up, they feel bad, I understand what they're saying, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And, they got to pay a little bit, but I don't think that guy would have minded having mother jumps. I got to hurt these people's penances, right? We got to go deep.
Yeah, we got to go.
We got to go. Ted, 16 Phoenix, what's up, Ted?
Oh, I've been keeping that secret for so long, and I'm just glad you're there to help me.
Okay, let it out.
Many years ago, I borrowed some money from my father-in-law, and I promised him, and I obeyed my promise, I vote for President Reagan if he was still in office.
Oh, my God.
And you did it?
I have to feel bad about that ever since.
Really? It's been easy, actually. Is it amazing? How does it feel to confess it finally? Better? So who did, but now you voted Democrat in the other elections, huh?
Every election except for that.
Wow, and you actually did it. That's amazing.
I actually did it.
And you said you could have just lied, but you chose not to, huh?
Well, I have this thing about money,
What was the money that you...
Yeah, what did you do with the money, Ted?
Well, I just got out of the Air Force, and I thought used the money to start a business.
And how'd that business do?
Well, I told him 3 years, and I just reopened it last year.
So Reagan, did Reagan's policies help you out after all?
Oh, I have been feeling so bad on my loss. Reagan Army screwed me so bad, I can't even believe it.
Well, it sounds to me like you got your penance.
can I say something to Denny?
Yeah.
We have a local DJ here on Air America who brought something to our attention yesterday. This was not a preemptive war, because we had no weapons to preempt.
Right.
It was a war of aggression.
Yes. That's breaking news. That guy's really on the pulse.
Yeah.
All right, thank you very much, Ted, and I hope that it sounds to me that... that your penance has been paid just by Reaganomics. Oh, so that was mean.
Well, what, because his business went belly up after 3 years?
Wow. No, it was mean what I said about the local DJ. I don't even know who could that be that there's a local DJ.
Well,
there's
a local DJ on Air America.
Well, that's right, because we're on live right now. It's the middle of the night in Phoenix. So
that's right. I wonder, so whoever follows
we us? Don't know.
Yeah.
Gene, listening to WLIB in Westchester. Gene.
Hi.
What's your sin, Gene?
Okay. Here's what happened, square business. The day after the election, when I realized that Junior was elected, I ran around to all my friends, and I got this idea in my head that if we got the choice issue off the table, that we could get enough votes to win.
So you started telling people that we've got...
That we have to give up on the abortion issue.
We
just was so sure that if we just give up on that issue, that we'd be able to bring some of these right-wing Christian nuts to our side and get enough votes to win.
Have you been talking to Hillary Clinton or something?
Well, I tell you, I felt, after I started realizing, first of all, I realized I looked like a blazing lunatic to all these people, but I started realizing that it was about compromising. And that if we start compromising, I might as well just register as a Republican.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true, and I think that it's a matter of, even talking about the issue in terms of, in their language, what we usually say is, reproductive freedom or
reproductive rights.
Mm-hmm.
But this is interesting, though.
I started seeing it is that if we could, what is an issue that we could get rid of because there's more important stuff going on, like people getting killed over in Iraq and all kinds of things like that. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So when I started thinking about it, it was like, no, we can't compromise. And I have a sub-real guilt thing here because I'm a practicing Catholic.
Wow.
Oh.
This is getting very complicated.
Layers of guilt.
Because clearly that, you couldn't bring this to the regular outlet.
So I don't even know if you guys can help me.
But we help everybody here.
You know what your penance is? You have to go confess in the church.
Okay. Well, that's big enough penance.
All right.
Anyway, I think it's a good issue for people to think about.
Well, yeah, and thank you for bringing it up. We have been talking a little bit about that, Gene. I appreciate your call.
Okay.
You take care,
Gene.
Bye.
So she has to go to the regular Catholic Church. Sure. It's like out of our hands.
Bless me, Father, for I really have sinned.
It's interesting that people actually know the context of this thing, because I've never confessed at a church. Maybe I should do that. Can I just do it, Chris? You're Catholic. You brought up Catholic. I'm Jewish. I'm non-practicing, and I have very limited belief in the Almighty.
Oh, but, yeah. We're very open.
Are you serious? Can I just, I can just go into confession. I can tell the guy, like, how do I start? Blessing Father, for I have sinned. I'm not even a Catholic.
No. Blessing Father, for I have sinned. It has been, like,
I've never, my last confession.
I've never been to confession, and I'm Jewish.
And these are my sins, and that's how it goes.
But wouldn't he just be stopping me, like, okay, right when I said Jewish, he'd be like, oh, I don't know if we can do that.
I don't think so. That's not how it works.
See, in the Episcopal Church, we have general confessions, and anybody can confess.
What do you
mean
general?
Liberal. We have a thing that we read that everybody reads in the congregation, say, look, we messed up. It's not specific, okay? We don't go into a room with a priest.
Yeah.
We just read a confession, and anybody who wants to come to our church can come. So I'm going to have you come to our church one Sunday.
And confess?
Sure.
I'll go to church.
You go to church?
Sure, why not?
Cool.
Do they have food afterwards, a little something?
What? Coffee hour, yeah.
What do you kidding? When you go to temple...
Munchies, man, munchies.
When we used to go to temple on Saturday mornings afterwards, there was always cake, and there was some the wine, the Mogan David wine.
No, there's no wine at all.
Some cookies, sponge cake, a very airy
my
sponge
cake. My wafers and wine.
But that's part of their...
That's communion.
That's part of their... No.
You haven't been in a long time, eh, Kalo?
See, this is where the Jews win. You understand? We get a little something after we
whatever.
Do the thing.
Yeah, whatever.
You got to sit through a different language, my friend. There are rewards for that.
Hey,
what?
We got a great last hour for you. It's coming up shortly here on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley, Mornings Edition on Air America Radio.
Alert.
I'm Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Kayla, what are you laughing about? What did I do wrong?
Well, you pressed the button before I told you to, man.
Hey, man, I'm a rebel. Get out! I'm a rebel, man.
Oh, okay.
You can't tell me when to push my buttons. I'll push a button anytime I want. Remember this one?
Fire truck!
Ah, that's a funny button. Remember how powerful that was? For months and months, that could just make people go crazy.
Fire truck!
Yeah. What else we got? Hey, how about this? If you want to be part of the Morning Sedition Book Club, you can go to morningsedition.com. My buddy Sam Lipside's book, Homeland, is available there. You've only got a few days to read it if you want to talk to Sam about it, but here's a little taste.
Just turn to my intimate portraits page in the yearbook, and you'll see that I was never anything approaching buck-like. Not unless there's such a thing in nature as a buck turtle.
Yes, Sam, very funny guy. It's about a guy who went to high school, and he was very bitter. His life didn't turn out the way he wanted it to turn out, and he's sort of a sad, apathetic, auto-eroticizing freak who just sits at home and does nothing but send off dispatches to his high school newsletter that will never be published, just sort of ranting about all the injustices of high school. And nice segue to we actually have bona fide high school students in the studio.
Yeah.
We have Sarah Vogel and Eliza Simons.
Hello.
Who have been here all morning observing. They are from Bronx Science High School.
You playing hooky?
Actually, no. This is finals week.
Oh, finals week.
Yeah.
And so you've already flunked?
Oh, yeah. No.
What have you learned this morning? Can you help us out? You've been here watching since 5:30, and you're holding up pretty well. I must admit, you don't look tired. You look like you're awake. You're ready to go. What have you observed from watching Mark and everybody in PDW and Clutch and everyone else?
It's great to see what's going on behind the scenes. There's so much, like, not chaos, but kind of, like, organized chaos.
Yeah, it's kind of like a intricate web of everybody working together.
Aww.
Whoa.
That almost sounds like
organized chaos and an intricate
web. Intricate web of organization. And at the top of that web, the spider, of course. Jonathan Larson weaving the web. You got to be careful sometimes. If you go off road too much, he'll spit web stuff at you. You'll into a little cocoon. So we were talking earlier about this no name calling week that's been instituted at some junior high schools around the country. Now, I was. Have you been called bad names? Are you name callers? Are you bullies? Come on, tell me the truth.
When I was little, Four Eyes, Sarah Vocal Cords.
Vocal cords.
Stupid things like that.
Don't you like the creative ones?
Oh, yeah.
What was yours?
I never got any. My brother, though, got names sometimes. His name is Casey. He was called, like, Gacy.
Gacy, see, that's the one that really, that's the one that gets people up in arms the most is the faggot and the gay name.
Yeah.
Those two things is what sort of started this whole thing, because faggot is used as a sort of general term, you know, for anybody that is weird or odd or, you know, seemingly
different,
and it's very offensive. Are you raising your hand, Eliza?
Yeah, you don't have to raise your hand. It's
no,
okay.
That was great. We had someone who sat in that chair used to raise her hand, too, like a month ago. But,
see, there you go. He's talking about the last woman that was in here. That's the problem.
What were you going to say?
I've been so conditioned by school.
It's okay.
I actually heard that the term faggot was used to refer to, in the Middle Ages, people, gay people were burned with big bundles of sticks, actually called faggots in England. That's a term of measurement to describe a big bundle of sticks.
Wow, I had no idea.
Semi-reliable.
Yeah, and that's what they call that's what they call a cigarette a fag in England. But you know, and that's why. But that's heinous. That the that's where it came from.
Yeah,
it was about like burning people.
It's you know, it's an overused term like the N-word, which I heard quite a bit as a kid.
Yeah,
and it's one of those things that you know, it really using it really kind of sort of is inexcusable at a point.
Well, my name, Marin, of course, you know, possibilities abound. We have Moron, very popular. Moron. Hey, yeah. Mark Moron. Ha ha. Yeah, I never heard that before. Then we have Moran, which isn't really, you know, a bad name, but it would imply that I was Irish, which I don't have a problem with, but I'm not. I'm And then the most clever one, I thought, was Marinated. Hey, Marinated. Hello.
Now, you know, you could have stopped that in his tracks. I told you the story about this guy that used to always get picked on a lot when I was in school. When I was in junior high school, there was a guy. He was just very weird. He had braces, the whole nine yards. And everybody used to rag on him. Everybody. They'd talk trash, push him around in the hallways, all of this. And one day, this kid pushed him, and he turned around and wrapped his hands around the guy's neck.
Mm-hmm.
And it took like three people to get him off. After that, no one messed with him. Kind of like the prison experience.
That's what you got to do.
Yeah, you act crazy, you go crazy on somebody, you'd be surprised how quickly they stop calling you names.
Yeah, but that's a little dangerous. It's you know, it's better just to go crazy in a weird way so that they even make fun of you more. That
no, choking somebody out works, trust me.
P.W. McDonald just reminded me of something. Here, I had this, when I was in fourth and fifth grade, or fifth and sixth grade, I had a coach named Coach Layton who, you know, we used to play stickball. And I was a little pudgy, okay, a little pudgy. And during stickball, sometimes the coach would call me Marshmallow Marin. He would go get it, Marshmallow. Come on, Ron, that's it, Marshmallow, go get it. And I'd be running around the bases, that's it, Marshmallow Marin, panting.
Yeah. Motivational technique that was for coaches.
And needless to say, I have no interest in sports whatsoever. Do you understand? See how that worked?
What? You had a coach for stickball?
That's great. You got one in on me. Let me explain to you how this works. You know, Kayla, all right, let me try and understand. Maybe it was just PE class. Maybe the coach was the guy that did all physical stuff. And maybe it was just a stickball example. You know what I mean? Maybe I needed help. Okay?
I understand.
See what you're doing? Why don't you just call me faggot? Go ahead. Call me faggot. Go ahead. I know you want to say it, Kayla. I know it's come out of your mouth before. Say it!
I'll wait during the break.
Oh, what a wuss. How about
there you
that?
Go.
You're a wussy.
Go ahead. Call him Marshmallow. Call him Marshmallow now, Kayla.
That's right, wussy. Kayla, Costco ho.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with Costco. You guys ever shop at Costco?
Oh, my God.
I wrote a college essay about my grandmothers who buy tons of stuff at Costco, actually.
You wrote a college? What?
For University of Chicago, the essay topic was talking about, you had to write an essay inspired by super huge mustard. It was a really good essay.
Wow. You need to talk to Kalo after. He'll put you in touch with people getting 15 pounds of chicken cutlets.
All right. You know what? This has digressed into a Costco conversation. But it's an interesting approach to it. It was a college entrance essay about Costco mustard.
Yeah.
Have you been accepted already?
Don't know till April.
Oh.
Maybe they'll just send you a box of mustard and say, nice try. No, you're going to get in.
Is that your first choice?
One of the first choices.
Okay.
Well, you know, when we come back, I think we're going to talk about torture. So we're going to let you guys go. Thanks for being here again. It's been very nice having you around.
You don't have to leave the premises. You can stay next door.
You can go back into the booth and watch us like we're in a tank of some kind. Sarah Vogel and Eliza Simons. Am I pronouncing everything right?
There you go.
Okay, well, we'll be back in a second with Torture. It's 14 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Courtesy of Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. That's Mark Riley.
Yes, it is.
We do have to get more women up here somehow.
Yeah.
Because we shouldn't be all this flustered. Do you know what I mean? It's like it's
by the fact that women are here.
Well, I don't know if it's women. It's just they're young, impressionable, excited to be here, and we're just a bunch of old jaded bastards. You know, it's just
old JB.
Yeah, it's just the energy is unbelievable. Yeah. Well, anyways, here we go.
You're going straight to hell, Maron.
I am not making any kind of
I know, I know.
You remember when you were young and curious about stuff? See, that's the thing.
No.
That's the thing.
No, I'm only kidding.
I miss, like, there's some part of me that really, I mean, you guys are reading into this. You really are. You really are.
Yeah, and that's because we're literate. We can read.
I am not. I just, there's some.
I know.
What if?
Oh, there's something about you, baby.
My wife is still in town, and
my wife has got Jacoby and Myers on speed dial. What's the problem?
Well, what I'm saying is that we, you know, I just miss being completely excited by everything. I said this earlier.
You know, sense of wonder about.
If I was back in high school, I wouldn't be as jaded and frightened as I was now. Obviously, you can't go back with the wisdom that you have now.
No.
But it's like there's some part of me, like even talking about that bullying stuff. There's some part about being in high school that is so frightening on a day-to-day level that you can't. You know, it's impossible to actually enjoy it.
I was addicted to cigarettes in high school, so my high school years, particularly in military school, were just built around finding cigarettes.
Wow. I got addicted to cigarettes in high school, but we were allowed to smoke outside.
Well, we were allowed to smoke, too. I just didn't have the money to buy them every day.
All right, let's do the Palm Pilot. This is from, as some of you know, that there is reports out of the Pentagon that have been confirmed that there are these new military secret units that are called the Strategic Support Branch, basically legitimized black ops units that are coming out of the Pentagon. So this is why this refers to it in Rumsfeld's Palm Pilot. Here it is for today, 7 a.m. Wake up. Try to do something, anything today without the friggin' press finding out about it. 9 a.m. Replace Strategic Support Branch spies with Washington Post reporters. Finally, someone who can gather information. 11 a.m., send fruit basket to CIA with apology card. Note, plant surveillance chip inside the kiwi.
Ooh.
Yeah. 1 p.m., begin Operation Democracy is a Messy Business. Remove covert operators from France and reassign them to patrolling San Francisco bathhouses. 3 p.m., quietly form strategic support branch to spy on the strategic support branch. Got to make sure nothing gets away. 6 p.m., now that I have my own spy organization in place, continue with plans for my own government. Note, see if we can get a green flag. Apparently that's just because he likes green. 9 p.m., bedtime, count my blessings. It's amazing what a man can accomplish with a few billion dollars and blackmail pictures of the president smoking crack.
Ooh.
That would be something. I wonder if he has ever smoked crack. I got a feeling he's done
inhale.
I know he's done a little yayo.
Well.
Yeah, but I don't know if he smoked crack. So let's get on this. Gonzalez. They're going to sort of torture Gonzalez a little bit by pushing it back for a week.
Yeah.
Where they're going to bend him over a chair and give him a couple of these.
Whoa!
Hey, Alberto, how's that feel?
Torquemada.
Gonzalez.
Hey, you know, I mean, this is a guy, you know, there's just so much stuff now. The question of the DUI, the question of Carrick, the question of Abu Ghraib, the question of torture in general.
This is a guy that says anything up until death is really just a Q&A.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's sad because it looks now as though, in contrast to Condoleezza Rice, who everybody figures is going to sail through, even with this debate that starts today, there are some people now that are thinking about voting against Gonzalez that were previously inclined to vote for him. For example, the senior senator from right here in New York, Chuck Schumer, is making noise now, like if he doesn't get good answers to some of his questions, he might not vote for Alberto Gonzalez.
Well, now, Mark, explain to me now again. Let's talk about why is it that the Democrats aren't given more? You know, what do they got to lose by honestly voting their hearts on this thing? I mean, I know politics is politics, and they're going to, you know, they're holding their punches for the big Social Security fight or whatever they say they're doing. But why aren't more Democrats standing up against this guy? It's clear that he doesn't represent democracy, and it's clear that he's an evil bastard on some level.
Well, see, in the Senate, there is horse trading that's done on a regular basis between Democrats and Republicans. The Senate is supposedly the more collegial branch of the Congress.
Yeah.
As a result, the lines of demarcation between Democrats and Republican positions on issues isn't always as clearly defined, A, as either party would want it to be, and B, as most Americans might think at first blush. That's why Condoleezza Rice, despite all the questions, despite the fact that Joe Biden, you know, tried to nail her on the number of trained Iraqi police and security forces, he said, I'm going to vote for you.
Yeah.
And that may have to do with some kind of an appropriation that Joe Biden would dearly like to get for his home state of Delaware.
Yeah.
And without Republican support, he's not going to get it. I mean, you remember now, Trent Lott from Mississippi was the past master at getting huge defense projects sent to his state.
Right.
And without being able to horse trade, without that aura of camaraderie, for want of a better term, a lot of these things would not get done. So these guys are not just holding their fire to put it on Social Security. They also do not want to disrupt that little delicate balance where if they don't bring home the bacon for their constituents, someone will run against them and say, hey, they're not doing the job.
And anything they do can be used against them in another campaign.
There you
go. Any particular special interest group within their state can not vote for them again for whatever little oversight or whether misstep they took.
Yeah.
So they've got to answer to, voting blocks. They've got to answer to lobbying factions within their states. This is the way democracy works. It isn't just about a guy speaking his mind. It's not just about a senator standing up. It's about whether or not that guy's going to take the risk that might, compromise his career.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at the flip side of this, that's part of the reason why there are a lot of Republicans in the Senate who are not prepared to back Bush's Social Security initiative. Because to them, they're afraid that their constituents are going to react very badly to this Social Security change that Bush is trying to push through.
It just amazes me that within red states that these people voted this president in, and in Florida, Tennessee, Mississippi, Nebraska, Colorado, Alabama, Georgia, that, the backlash for voting in Republicans has been that, there's been a tremendous compromise in a lot of the insurance and health care, affordable health care provided people.
Yeah.
And that's a Republican issue. These guys are chipping away at these same people. I don't know when or how the people that vote against their economic self-interest are going to come back around to the Democratic Party, but hopefully it's not from just pandering to the worst of their moral values.
Well, there's also the idea that these are paper cuts. For example, Byron Dorgan, the senator from North Dakota, is talking about trying to stall Michael Levitt, who's President Bush's choice for health secretary, unless he was guaranteed a vote on allowing the importation of cheap prescription drugs from Canada.
Yeah.
Now, that's a legit thing to stall it on, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, well, at some point, it's like, when do they say, look, we're gonna have to put profit motives aside for a few and, accommodate people who need help, who need, sick people, even air quality and all this other stuff. I don't get the end game, Riley, and this is always the thing that baffles me. It's like, we all got to live on the same planet, even the idiots that are ruining it.
Yeah.
So at what point does everyone in this country say, hey, we got to slow down? We've got to, we've got to reassess, the pace of the way everything is operating. And hopefully someone within the Democratic Party will stand up and make that understandable to people.
Yeah.
For the next election cycle.
Let's hope.
We got to talk about torture. Is that possible? Do we still have time? Yeah, when we come back, 27 past the hour. Okay.
And we're going to talk about a different kind of torture. We're going to talk about female genital mutilation with two award-winning filmmakers who made a film called Asylum about just that subject here on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley, Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
34 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Reilly.
Hey!
It's morning's edition on Air America Radio. In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to the filmmakers of Asylum, which is a film about female genital mutilation, a documentary. We're going to be talking with the producer and the director in just a few minutes. But right now, since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in this alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So now on phone, once again, is Planet Bush correspondent Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. God's got a secret espionage unit, and he's going to infiltrate your soul.
Okay, good.
All right. Get right in there.
All right, good. So today, let's talk about the repercussions of the president's inaugural speech.
Oh, I was there. Did you see me?
No.
I was wearing my special red cowboy boots with the entire Bush family stitched on and matching chaps. I made them myself. You couldn't have missed me.
You know what?
I was beautiful.
I did miss you, Lawton. What about the speech, buddy?
Well, it was a magnificent oration.
Yes. Yeah,
I believe school children will be quoting from that speech when I'm in heaven with my Lord and you're burning in the pits of hell.
Okay, well, if you think that, my friend, so what was your favorite quote from the speech that the president did give on that day?
Well, I don't remember anything specific. Mark. Come on. I mean, there was some freak right in front of me chanting F. Bush, over and over, so I could barely hear anything, but... Uh-huh. I was pretty obvious to me the president's real serious about liberty and freedom.
And why would you say
liberty
that? Why would you say that, Lawton?
Well, because he kept saying freedom and liberty over and over.
Yeah.
You know, terrorists hate those words. It's like kryptonite to them. You just say the word and they run. Watch. Freedom.
You're out of your mind. All right. Well, what he did say, listen to this, buddy. Okay, pull it together. Here's one of the quotes that he did say.
Yes.
The policy of the United States is to seek and support the growth of democratic movements and institutions in every nation and culture with the ultimate goal of ending tyranny in our world.
Amen.
All right, wait a minute. Does this mean we're now going to invade China and North Korea and Iran and every other foreign dictatorship?
I don't see why not.
Freedom
and liberty.
Well, for one thing, we don't have the military manpower, Lawton.
We don't. Well,
yes.
Romney says all we need to invade any country is a couple of light armored divisions. Now, why would you doubt him?
What are you, crazy? Look around. Wake up, my friend. Here's another Bush quote. Quote, all who live in tyranny and hopelessness can know the United States will not ignore your oppression or excuse your oppressors.
Yes.
But aren't we allied with Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, Russia? Don't we do business with these oppressors on a daily basis, my friend?
Hey, Mark, you know, again, you're ignoring all those times. Here's what he said. Liberty, freedom. Okay, that's all you need to know. Ask not what you can do about liberty, but ask what you can say about freedom.
What is
liberty and freedom.
Who the hell said that, Lawton?
Come on now, Mark. Now sing with me. Freedom's not a state like Maine or Virginia. Freedom is a state of mine. Come on now.
No,
sing with me.
I'm not going to sing.
Nobody will ever sing with me. I was the first kid in high school to own the original Broadway cast album of Shenandoah. You think that would have made me cool, but it didn't.
Yeah, I bet it didn't.
I had Cats and Folly.
Oh, no.
And La Cage aux Folles.
Lawton, it's okay, buddy. It's all right, man. It's okay, all right? So, it's okay, buddy. It's okay. You know, you know that's a secret path. What's the matter? You all right? Yeah, you okay?
Oh, you like show tunes. Well, hey, so do I. There's a bright golden haze on the
meadow. All right, I'm hanging up.
Goodbye. God loves you. Deal with it.
Okay, all right, thank you. All right, there you go. Lawton Smalls, as usual. So now... this is something I don't know a lot about, and I'm excited to talk to our guests because it is important, and it's information that's out there that we don't hear a lot talked about. You saw the film already. I didn't get to watch it. The female genital mutilation continues to be a threat to thousands of women every day. The documentary Asylum tells the story of one Ghanaian woman's flight from the brutal practice. We have with us the filmmakers of the documentary Asylum. We have Jenny Ritiker and Sandy McLeod. Jenny is the producer, and she is on the phone from Sundance. And Sandy's the director, who is here in the studio. Thanks for being with us today, both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How you doing?
So can we talk briefly about how widespread is female genital mutilation, and where does it stand right now? Either of you.
Jenny?
Yeah, it's actually quite widespread throughout
different parts of Africa. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's something like 6,000 women and girls who undergo female genital mutilation every day.
Oh, my God. So your film follows the life of Baba Ando. And what was her specific situation?
Well, Baba actually grew up believing that her father was dead, because when her mother and father were married when her mother was 14, and her mother hadn't been mutilated. She was from a different part of Ghana than her father was. And when Baba was 3 months old, the father wanted to have them both circumcised or mutilated, and Baba's mother ran away with her and raised her, telling her that her father was dead. And when Baba was around 21, she fell in love with a guy. Maybe she was actually 23. She fell in love with somebody. He was from out of the country. He wanted the father's family's permission to get married. And she went to the mother and said, there must be somebody in the family that could give us permission. And the mother, and she fought about it a lot. The mother wouldn't tell her anything about her father. And then a family, what she thought was a family friend, said, you know, I'll take you to your father's village. And on the way, she said, actually, your father's alive.
Mm. And I'm your half-sister.
Wow.
And I'm going to take you to meet your father.
Mm. Now, Jenny and Sandy, you can speak to this, too. When people talk about female genital mutilation in Africa, in many parts of Africa, we are not really talking about a surgical procedure done by a doctor in a hospital, are we?
No.
Tell us, what are we talking about?
Well, it's done within the family, mostly within the family. It's something your grandmother might do to you. And it's done often with a rusty razor blade. It's a very dangerous operation because there's a major artery there, and a lot of women die by bleeding to death.
Incredible. Now, how far into the I won't say the actual procedure, but how far was it before Baba ended up resisting actually having this done?
Baba resisted immediately. I mean, she thought that, you know, she was first overjoyed to meet her father. She said, you know, they looked just alike. It was like, oh my God, you're alive, and he was happy to meet her, and he took her around and introduced her to everybody. And it was when she said, 3 days later, she said, I want your blessing for this marriage. And he said, oh, no. Now that I've found you, I've already married you off to somebody. I've accepted money. I've accepted cattle. And you're going to marry this old guy, and you are going to be circumcised tomorrow.
Oh, my God. It's so brutal. I can't even, it's hard for me to wrap my brain around it. The film is Asylum. We're talking to Jenny Ridiker and Sandy McLeod, the producer and director of the film. We're going to be back with an excerpt from the film, which airs on Showtime tonight. It's 41 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio.
Who are these
Morning Sedition.
On record, it's out. It's no secret anymore.
Morning Sedition from Air America Radio.
Try and land this thing. It's 46 past the hour. Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Yes, I am.
We're talking to the filmmakers of Asylum. We have Jenny Ridiker, who is out in Sundance. She's the producer. Sandy McLeod, the director, is here in the studio. Asylum is on Showtime.
No.
Cinemax tonight. I don't know why I got stuck in my head. Cinemax. Maybe it's because I have Showtime. I apologize. It is on Cinemax this evening. The subject of the film is a documentary about Baba Ando, who is a woman from Ghana that escaped genital mutilation. Now, genital mutilation, as we've been talking about, is not like circumcision. This is more like female castration. It has been outlawed by the government of Ghana, but still happens within families, and it's in a horrible practice. Now, we have some segment of the film. Do you want to talk about what we're going to hear here?
After Baba's father found out that she wasn't going to marry this guy, Baba then had to run from him. And she went to Accra and was in hiding for quite a while, and then found what she called her connection man, who got her a passport. And the next thing she knew, she was in the United States, a place she'd never been before, and with the fake passports.
So that the thing was is that she escaped because this man that she was, you know, paid off to marry by her family.
Right.
But she wasn't paid off, but her family was paid off to basically give her to this man who demanded that she be, you know, genitally mutilated.
Yes.
Right.
So she bolted with the help of this guy and ended up in the United States.
Right.
Okay.
And the first thing they saw was that she had a false passport.
Mm-hmm.
And Baba said, you know, you can't send me back because I'll die if you send me back. And once someone says that, then they are entitled to a process to find out who they are, why they're here.
Mm-hmm.
So she was sent to a detention center in Elizabeth, New Jersey. And this is Baba after she has been there.
They put me in a van with all the handcuffs and the chains. I said, oh my God, they are going to kill me, because I didn't know where they were taking me. And the way they were talking on the walkie-talkie sounds, they are taking us into a very serious place. And I said, am I a prisoner? And she said, no, this is a detention. And I said, detention or prison is the same.
So Asylum airs tonight on Cinemax, and it was nominated for an Academy Award last year. Is that true?
It's
true. Best documentary short. Sure.
And now, what is going on with Baba Ondo now? I mean, what now, is she a citizen? Is she I don't want to, you know, give away the movie, but you know, did she successfully escape this horrendous, not just the detention, but obviously, you know, the what she was running from initially?
Baba was in detention for a year, and then she had a hearing,
mm-hmm.
and she was granted asylum.
Okay.
Mm. Now, Jenny. I had a chance to interview, I should let the audience, I had a chance to interview Baba while she was still in detention at Elizabeth.
Okay.
A very, very sobering experience, because it is, for all intents and purposes, a prison. And you're talking to people who, though they had been convicted of no crime, were not free to move about. And it's a very, very sobering experience. But, Jenny, I know that Baba has wanted, since she's been here in the States, to go back to Ghana, and that she had, in fact, been in contact with her family. What did her family tell her about the conditions for her return?
The conditions for her return is they would still want to do this to her. I mean, her father he's not just an insignificant guy. He's a very powerful man, and so he had people looking for her. Her process of hiding was that she was kidnapped a couple of times and escaped. Her friends couldn't keep her because he had a lot of money, and he put it, there was a reward out for her. So, you know, her family would love her to come back, but they feel like there's nothing that they could do that her father would insist on having this done, because in their culture she has shamed him. Because he made a deal and she broke the deal. And, you know, the other thing about seeing Baba in prison, or detention, whatever you call it, is, you know, in Elizabeth they're put into a prison that there is no windows, and so the women in there and the men, because there's many men who are in asylum seekers who are also at Elizabeth, they don't see the light of day. So Baba didn't see the light of day for over a year. They never go outside. I've met women who were in prison for over 5 years, sometimes 7 years, and all of their crimes were escaping, trying to run for their lives, which, considering Bush's talk about freedom and liberty, strikes me as really an alternate universe that he's living in, and that there's thousands of people living in the United States in these prisons who are incarcerated for crimes that are just simply fleeing for their lives.
Now, what drew you to Baba's story specifically?
Actually, what drew me to the story was I knew that there was a new area of human rights law that was now considering, for the first time in the 90s, a body of human rights law that considered women's rights as human rights, so that you can't have your genitals cut off without your permission, and you can't be married to somebody that is forced into, you know, marriage or sexual slavery. And this is a whole new body of human rights law. And the United States had signed on to an international treaty supporting that. So originally I'd wanted to do a film that was not just about female mutilation, but about different stories of these women and what happened to them, but we weren't able to raise enough money to do that. So in the meantime, I was doing research and visiting women in prison, and that's how I met Baba. And when I met her, I instantly knew that she was the person I wanted to do a film about.
Do you cover any of that in the documentary, some of the information about these laws?
No, you know, it's actually just a very first-person account of her story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she essentially tells her own story. Do you get a sense, either one of you, that had Baba come to the States after September 11th, she might well have had a very different experience than she did?
No question.
Yeah. I mean, she would have been deported immediately.
So they wouldn't even honor at all, you know, the need for asylum that had nothing clearly to do with terrorism. They just started turning everybody away.
Well, there's reason to believe that. No one really is in those interview halls with the INS, but there's not as many people being placed in detention or coming in seeking asylum, and so the assumption is that people are being turned away at the point of entry. Suddenly, after September 11th, it dried up. Now, maybe people are afraid to come here, but I think that more people are being deported.
Hmm. So now, in terms of how many success stories there are with this stuff, obviously, you know, one of the reasons why you two got involved with this was to raise awareness that this is happening, and that, you know, you have a documentary that ends in at least on a high note in terms of the potential story that could occur. What is the success rate of people getting asylum?
You know, I don't actually know what percentages are, but there was a woman named Fazia Kasinga that was the first woman, and that was in the 90s, to get asylum based on this in the United States. And there have definitely been other cases, and there is legal precedent, and there are, you know, groups of attorneys who are working on these cases, moving the laws forward. So I do think that there is hope, and I do think people should continue to push for it, and I think the more awareness that there is, that it's not just terrorists who are coming into the country without passports, but it's people who are fleeing for their lives.
How can people get involved?
There's the American Friends Service Committee has a group that's very involved with it, and they have an office in Newark, New Jersey. They're good people to get involved with.
They go visit these people on a regular basis.
And obviously, on a human rights level, even given the sort of the power of the religious right in this country and how they want to restrict, you know, reproductive freedom of women in this country, this is an extreme, you know, sort of version of, you know, just how repressive and violent, you know, patriarchy can be, and how repressive and violent these restrictions on women can be, and the abuse is just horrible. The show, The Asylum, airs tonight on Cinemax. And it was great talking to you, too. I appreciate you coming down.
Thanks
a lot
for having us.
Thanks a lot.
Take care.
That was Ginny Whitaker and Sandy McLeod. As I said, Asylum, the documentary about Baba Ondo's plight to escape female genital mutilation, is on Cinemax tonight.
Absolutely.
Wow. It's like, you know, it's that just talking about the topic is it's a very heavy topic, Mark.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is, in my mind, is that the American government, with all the clout that this country has, it would seem to me that they could get the Ghanaians to really start enforcing their own laws under certain diplomatic circumstances. We got a new Secretary of State coming in who plans on ending tyranny and ending all the rest of this foolishness that goes on in the world. It would be nice if Condoleezza Rice would say to the leaders of Ghana, you know what, you need to enforce the laws that you already have on the books that prohibit this kind of practice. So people will be more nervous about doing it in their homes.
So, you know, I've never been to Sundance, to shift gears kind of abruptly. You know, Sandy,
me neither.
You didn't go out there. She didn't want you to come out. She's out there in the snow.
No, I stayed here with you guys.
There you go.
I appreciate you doing that, but there was part of me like it was so heavy. And I know she's out there like a ski lodge somewhere, and she's, you know, out there talking about this movie. Is she out there with another project or something, or just hanging out?
I think she's hanging out.
Hanging out.
I've never been. I imagine that. I guess it's probably sort of a cluster, you know.
Well, yeah, I imagine it's a lot of fun.
All right. Well, here's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Here are your marching orders for today. One, enlist in Rumsfeld's new espionage unit as a stylist. Two, Ashcroft's leaving. Time to retrieve porn stash from underneath the rose bushes. Three, write anti-Bush book for single women called We're Just Not That Into You. Yeah? Four, oppose anti-abortion rally by saying that's the best argument for birth control I've ever seen. Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Bush only wants $80 billion more for the military? Wait, let me look in my jar. Here, take what you need. Wake up, sheeple, you're being robbed.
Well, he was embedded before, but he'll be talking to us tomorrow. Mick Ware, Time Magazine's Baghdad Bureau Chief, joins us live from Iraq. We're counting down to the election.
Yep.
Such as it is, or
yep.
such as it will
Noah
be.
Noah Feldman, too. The
Noah
guy
Feldman.
Right, the Iraqi
Constitution. We'll talk about whether the Sunni is going to be writing anything in the current, upcoming Constitution tomorrow on Air America Radio. Have a good one, man.
You too, man.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.